there, I think we've achieved that. Sarah Olney.
Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Speaker, for granting me the opportunity to have a debate on this issue and also for ensuring that I would be heard. This is an issue of specific importance to my constituents, but it also has broader implications for our country's approach to climate change, to infrastructure, and to the recovery from the COVID pandemic. I asked for this debate in response to South Western Railway's recent consultation on the future of its services. Like all of our rail operating companies, SWR has run a reduced service during the period of the pandemic and has been supported by considerable public funding. This has been essential for keeping our public services going and to supporting the economy, both through the lockdown and as we move forward. SWR is understandably looking ahead to its post-pandemic operation and has put forward a revised timetable for consultation. This revised timetable proposes to cut services from many of the stations in my constituency. It will be cutting trains from North Sheen and Mortlake stations from once every 15 minutes to once every half hour, and removing peak time services from Kingston and Norbiton. These proposals have been strongly resisted by myself, by my neighbouring MPs in Kingston and Twickenham, and by many, many residents across my constituency and beyond. South Western Railways has justified these proposals by asserting that commuter travel is likely to recover to just 60% of pre-COVID demand. This seems extremely unlikely. In April to June this year, passenger numbers on South Western Railways, according to the Office for Rail and Road, were already 45% of the level that they had been before lockdown restrictions began. This was a period when there were still many restrictions in place and workers were being asked to work from home if possible. It is ridiculous that South West Railways think they can make long-term forecasts of commuter demand when they do not have any post-lockdown demand figures to look at. TfL figures for overground journeys on their network were already showing 55% of pre-lockdown demand by August, and anecdotal evidence from myself and many other commuters who are using the train services more regularly now show continued growth in rail journeys, both in the centre of London and on suburban services since that time. I suspect that somebody in South Western Railways has just assumed that all commuters will make a choice to work in their offices on Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays in future, and have extrapolated a post-COVID demand of 60% from that assumption. But they are ignoring the large numbers of school children, for example, who depend upon suburban services to get to and from school, not to mention their teachers and other school staff, and the large number of workers across many industries and the public sector who will need to be in their workplace 5 days a week. And the government has been most insistent in recent weeks that it expects to see civil servants back at their desks on a full-time permanent basis, for example. And we know that many younger workers prefer to be in the office than stuck in their bedrooms at home. It is much, much too soon to be making assumptions about how people will carry out their working lives once the fear of COVID and of contracting COVID has disappeared. And we have already seen, for example, in the last few weeks, as we know COVID numbers are on the rise, we have started to see perhaps a slight tail off in the growth of rail users, perhaps in response to the understanding that we are not yet out of the woods on this pandemic and that people still need to take care and that we still need to be cautious. And I don't think it is possible to make any forecasts of post-pandemic railway usage until such a time as we can be confident that we are completely out of this pandemic. But this assumption that demand for services will reduce highlights the great challenge facing commuter services. Now, for many decades, rail operators have assumed that commuters are a captive customer and that because they are forced to make the same journey 5 days a week, demand for rail services will continue and will grow and will be inelastic to price increases. Ever-increasing fares will continue to be paid by commuters who have no other alternative than to use the rail services that they are offered by their local rail operator. But the pandemic has revealed to us that we can continue to work successfully from our homes and from other locations, and that we therefore have a choice. We have a much greater range of commuting options to choose from. If we want, we can stay at home and work just as successfully in many industries and many sectors as we could if we were in the office. We may only need to go into the office for a few hours. We may choose to travel later. We may choose to come home later. We might choose to adopt any kind of pattern of working and be based somewhere between work and between home and the office. And it will no longer hold true, I think, in the future. I think this is one assumption that we might be able to make with some confidence. It will no longer hold true that there is a whole huge number of, particularly people living in the suburbs, such as in my constituency, who will require train services to get them to their offices before 9 o'clock in the morning, and who will therefore be captive to price rises on the trains. I think South Western Railway's mistake is to assume that that increased range of options will necessarily mean that fewer people will choose to travel at peak time and to plan accordingly. It really betrays an extraordinary lack of confidence in their service to assume that once people have more options, they will not willingly choose to use trains. And instead of seeking to persuade people to use trains, South Western Railways have just decided to cut supply. This is not the entrepreneurial spirit that railway privatisation sought to inspire. The challenge that the country faces right now is not just from COVID. We also face the far greater challenge of cutting our carbon emissions. And much of this reduction needs to come from changing the way we travel. Government has made a clear commitment to modal shift as part of its strategy to reduce transport-related emissions, and this means encouraging travellers to use trains, buses and active travel instead of motor cars. There is no doubt that people have continued to use their motor cars. We see motor car journeys now at similar and even greater levels than before the pandemic. If we are to meet our carbon emission goals, then we need to redouble our efforts to encourage people to travel by train. How would a free market in rail travel respond to the challenge presented by home working and car use? It would cut prices to stimulate demand. And yet we can see that the cost of rail tickets has increased by 36% over the last 10 years, compared to just a 9% increase in the cost of motoring. What would be the impact of cutting services on rail operator income? It would decrease demand for rail services and cut fare income. Rail operators would then be forced to increase fares on remaining services to cover their costs. With a greater choice of how and when to travel, indeed, whether to travel at all, more and more commuters will choose not to use a train service that offers ever-increasing prices for fewer and fewer services. And this, of course, will have a knock-on impact on our rail network as a whole. We will see underused stations gradually closed. We will see fewer and fewer services. We will find that rail operators will find it harder and harder to cover routine maintenance costs. And what I do confidently forecast, even if we don't think we can yet forecast user numbers, is that reduced rail services, reduced income will eventually result in a spiral of fewer and fewer services and eventually cutting off those services entirely. And I think that that is something that the Rail Minister and I are both united in very much wanting to avoid. So I think it is clear that now is not the time to be thinking about cutting services. While commuters are thinking about how to structure their working lives, we need to incentivise rail travel and encourage commuters and other travellers to use it. The rail industry has already identified that there are great opportunities for growth in leisure travel. Let us improve the offering. More comfortable seats, better catering options, more space for luggage, more reliable Wi-Fi, and offer competitive pricing to make it a more economical option than travelling by car. I love trains. They are by far my preferred way to travel. And although there are many advantages to working from home, I was surprised to discover how much I missed my commute during lockdown. The growth of our suburban train network during the 20th century created new towns and neighbourhoods and enabled many more people to enjoy life away from the cramped housing of the city. But our city centres depend upon being accessible to a large number of people. We cannot maintain the unique economic, cultural and social life of central London if we discourage people from travelling into the city. And we cannot tackle the challenge of climate change if we don't invest in affordable and accessible alternatives to the motor car. So I call upon the Minister to act to stop these proposed cuts in railway services and instead to encourage people to use them. Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker.
Oh, Munira Wilson.
Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Speaker. Can I start by congratulating my honourable friend and constituency neighbour, the Member for Richmond Park, on securing this important debate, and thank her and the Minister for allowing me time to speak. As my honourable friend has already laid out so eloquently the economic and environmental case for incentivising and supporting rail travel, I want to focus specifically on the South Western Railway consultation, how it's been run, the rationale behind it, and the impact in particular on my constituency. Now, let me be clear, my constituents and I absolutely understand the dramatic impact the pandemic has had on passenger numbers and the huge fluctuations this has caused as a result of the lockdowns. They recognise the need for emergency and temporary, I repeat, temporary timetables, which have been in operation for the past 18 months. However, the proposals to permanently slash services by up to 50% for some stations are fundamentally flawed, because they're flawed in terms of timing, they're flawed in terms of rationale and how the consultation was conducted. And the impacts for busy suburban stations where there are no tube alternatives in my constituency to reach central London are frankly unacceptable. Now, on the timing, we've still, as my honourable friend said, we've still no idea what long-term travel patterns will look like. We're still in a pandemic. And so my constituents are just bemused as to why these decisions are being taken now on permanent service levels. It's my understanding from the emergency measures agreement in place between SWR and the Department for Transport that the DFT suspends the performance and financial arrangements from the original franchise agreement. And during this period, it's up to the Secretary of State to set these targets. So these extraordinary measures have been taken precisely because the impact on passenger numbers could not have been foreseen and continue to be volatile. And so it's for this very reason that now is the wrong time to be using passenger numbers as the basis for long-term decisions about timetables. SWR have themselves described future passenger volume projections as a guess and conceded that more analysis is indeed needed. And so I would say SWR needs to continue running its current temporary timetable, adjusting the number of services as demand increases, conduct more analysis on changing passenger numbers, and undertake a consultation on any permanent changes once new travel patterns are better understood, probably in 6 to 12 months' time. Now, on the rationale, it beggars belief that the central argument deployed by SWR is that because punctuality and service levels have increased during the pandemic. Madam Deputy Speaker, I can't use unparliamentary language here, but it would seem like SWR have only just discovered that bears do indeed relieve themselves in the woods. Now, of course, fewer services mean more punctual services. That's blindingly obvious. It shouldn't be a case for slashing services. And at the time of the contract award, importantly, SWR promised improvements in punctuality without the need for service reductions. So SWR must fulfil these previous commitments and provide a punctual and reliable service without the proposed drastic cuts. And this consultation was run over the summer holiday period with only strategic stakeholders, not the people who use the services. The commuters themselves have not had a chance to have their say, and they will only be consulted once the timetable has been decided just before it's implemented. That is no consultation at all. Now, on the impact for my constituents, I have made it clear to both the Minister and to SWR management that the proposed cuts are wholly unacceptable. To not reinstate the Hounslow Loop service off-peak will slash direct services by half to London for residents of St Margaret's and Witten, resulting in only a half-hourly service to and from Waterloo for much of the day, in comparison to every 15 minutes or so prior to the pandemic, certainly for St Margaret's. I know there's a spacing issue at Witten, which I think can be tackled in a different way. A reduction of services by 50% at these zones 4 and 5 London train stations is inconceivable, particularly as leisure travel is due to return, or projected to return, to 105% of pre-pandemic levels. Peak time service reductions through Hampton, Wick and Teddington will result in 15% capacity reductions. And these stations are already back to being very busy in the morning. There's great concern about overcrowding if these cuts are implemented. In terms of impacts, it would be remiss of me not to mention the Shepparton line. Which affects Hampton and Fulwell in my constituency. There are no proposed cuts, but frankly, if you cut any more, there wouldn't be a service left. So I'd ask the Minister to comment on whether he thinks in 2021 it's acceptable to have one train service an hour from Hampton, which is a busy residential area, and which has also got a growing life sciences business that's doubling its workforce on an annual basis at the moment. We should be boosting those services. So, Madam Deputy Speaker, I'll finish by saying that here we are on the eve of COP26. We cannot have a car-led recovery. We need to be incentivising rail travel. These cuts will simply push people into their cars, and we need a clear plan to boost rail travel post-pandemic. It is clear these cuts are financially driven, but they're financially illiterate because we'll have all the fixed costs of the network remaining in place while passenger numbers are depressed and revenue is therefore reduced. So I would be grateful if the Minister will confirm what level of savings the Department for Transport and Treasury hope to gain from these cuts. The local and London-wide economy can't afford these cuts, our planet can't afford these cuts, and residents in Witten, St Margaret's and Teddington can't afford these cuts. So I ask the Minister to intervene and stop these plans, or at the very least to delay them. Thank you, Madam Deputy.
Minister Chris Heaton-Harris.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. And can I start by congratulating the Honourable Member for Richmond Park in securing this important adjournment debate today, and also thank her friend, the Honourable Member for Twickenham, for contributing. Lots of honourable members and right honourable members have actually made me aware of their interest in this subject, including the right honourable gentleman for Epsom Manual, who I wouldn't say he's constantly talking to me about it, but every time I see him, he does mention this particular subject. I do know how important it is to members affected by the consultation. And thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker, for keeping us to time today. An excellent reminder that Parliament, much like the railway, functions at its best only when things run smoothly and efficiently. And that, Madam Deputy Speaker, is actually really the crux of the matter today. The need to make sure that our railways do actually run smoothly and efficiently and put passengers first. Let me try and put this debate into some sort of context. In February 2020, pre the pandemic, our railways had one of their busiest months on record, and the commuter services from the Honourable Lady's constituency in the morning were busier than ever too. It was, Madam Deputy Speaker, standing room only on in fact, on all early commuter morning peak services into London, and indeed the vast majority of morning peak services around the country. But there were issues too. The lines into Waterloo, for example, were at capacity, and any delay would cascade through in the morning, would cascade through the services for the rest of the day, often creating delays on other services as well, as staff and trains were in the wrong place at the wrong time, or where they crossed lines and all things got excited. And huge amounts of delay minutes, which is what the industry measures these things by, were created by those issues. Indeed, in May 2018, the whole system nearly keeled over. Unachievable timetables bid for in very complicated franchise competitions, combined with infrastructure not being delivered on time and industrial action, created a toxic mix and delays up and down the country, where millions of journeys were disrupted. Action was called for in this chamber very, very loudly, and indeed by consumers, punters, passengers up and down the land. And a comprehensive review was started, led by a gentleman called Keith Williams. Now, going back to my story about last February, following that very, very busy February on our railways came the pandemic. And in April 2020, passenger numbers were down to 4 or 5% of what they'd been a year earlier, almost Victorian levels of carriage. So when Keith Williams' work came to fruition in a white paper this May, the William Shapps Plan for Rail white paper, we had to not only just take account of the issues that were there pre-pandemic, but we obviously had to have an eye on what had happened in the previous 15 months. And I'm very pleased to say that the white paper received cross-party support, and I thank the Honourable Lady and her party for being so positive about the need for reform. Everyone across politics and across the rail industry realised that with passenger numbers still stuttering, these reforms were required more than ever. And we needed to ensure that our national timetable is reliable and fit for the future, and had to be one of those integral parts of those reforms to ensure that passengers get the reliable, clean trains they deserve is a key reform. Ensuring we have a timetable that allows freight operators, which take lorries off our roads and help decarbonise journeys and get goods to places in a much more environmentally friendly way than before, is also part of those reforms. And that is why actually this debate is so timely and so important. The challenge for the railways is not an easy one. The industry must rethink its offer to passengers and to freight, whilst carefully balancing the need to preserve the excellent performance that the Honourable Lady for Twickenham talked about, deliver reliable passenger services and provide good value for money for the hard-working taxpayers that use it and those that don't. It needs to ensure that timetables are attractive, efficient, reliable and are fit for purpose. Now, South West Railway's routes have historically seen very, very high patronage. I used to commute myself on those lines, and this House will be aware that SWR and Network Rail have historically responded to ever-growing customer demand by increasing the number of trains on the network, often at the expense, and as I mentioned earlier, of performance and reliability of services and the infrastructure they run on. And I'm absolutely sure the Honourable Lady would agree that it is no use having frequent services if they don't run reliably because the network's too busy, and it's no use advertising trains if you have to cancel them to recover time in the timetable, and it's absolutely infuriating promising something to passengers that you cannot deliver. So I'm very keen to ensure that any timetables that flow in the future do what they say they are going to do and can be completely relied upon. Now, as we all know, passengers are slowly returning to the railways, but behaviours have changed. The morning peak hours are back to being the busier trains of the day, but I was shown data earlier this week that demonstrated to me that only one of the, in a new normal midweek day, only one singular train coming into Waterloo was at or over capacity. I'll happily give way on that point.
Just on that point, I wonder if you might reflect upon what I was saying in my speech earlier about how we're not over this pandemic yet, and we cannot yet start measuring what post-pandemic behaviour is going to be like. As I said, we are starting to see another quite a large increase in cases, and that will have made people nervous about coming back to work, coming back into their offices, and therefore it is too soon, really, to be starting to think about whether too soon to start measuring how many people are on the trains and whether we can expect that to be a constant in the future.
I agree with the Honourable Lady, and but we do need to have timetables that to base things on, but we also need the flexibility to respond to demand, something I will come on to. But as the Honourable Lady also described, the pandemic has changed how people use our railways, and the railways absolutely need to respond. And I've said this to industry audiences loads of times, but in the past, the rail industry has never actually had to compete for its market. Its market has always come to it, and actually, lots of commuters in her constituency and mine will have lots of stories about having to stand on journeys for very long distances because there was no alternative. Well, now actually, trains are having to compete for their market, or to win their market back for the first time ever. And so we do need to get this right, but it is in a time of flex. But we do need the certainty of having timetables so people do come back to rail as and when they feel comfortable with that. And I hope they do in big number, and I expect them to in big number. Now, SWR and Network Rail have started to plan for a baseline timetable that can balance three important considerations: the performance of service, the attractiveness of offer, and the efficiency of cost. And, Madam Deputy Speaker, it's right and proper that they should have consulted stakeholders when embarking on such an ambitious endeavour. Happily give way.
Would he be able to respond to the question I made in my speech of what are the cost savings expected to be delivered by these proposed cuts?
I'm not sure if I've got the exact detail in pennies, but I will, if I haven't, when I flick through my notes when I'm reading my speech at the same time, I shall respond to the Honourable Lady in writing, if that's okay. But working in partnership with Network Rail, SWR is proposing changes which will deliver 89% of pre-COVID levels of service and 93% of pre-COVID levels of capacity. This is an uplift on what we have today, which is 85% of pre-COVID service levels and 85% of capacity. And that's against the backdrop of the forecast 76% of pre-COVID passenger footfall returning by December 22. To put that in a different context, but to maybe give it some colour, currently there are 1,164 trains departing Waterloo on a normal weekday. If this timetable consultation and its plans within go all the way through, that would rise to 1,338. But I have to say that I am very sympathetic to the Honourable, both Honourable Ladies' concerns about the level of public, level of service on public transport, especially from the environmental perspective. And we did have a conversation earlier today where we talked about air pollution and the consequences of having more car journeys. And that's why having a high-performing railway is so important, because only by ensuring the rail offer is a quality one and reliable and attractive as possible will we get passengers back onto the railway, which we all know is one of the greenest ways to travel. Now, SWR tell me that the service levels set out in the consultation leave enough flexibility for it and Network Rail to introduce additional services in the future as and when demand returns for them. And I cannot stress enough that I am very keen to see that level of flexibility based on demand to be ensured and in some way be able to articulate that and demonstrate that to the to honourable members so they can see what is actually going on services. I'm sure the Honourable Lady will agree that reliability is the most important aspect of a good timetable, and which is why I'm keen that SWR introduce the new Class 701 Arterio train at the earliest opportunity, because this new fleet of trains offer even greater capacity to what we have now and a promise of even better reliability, which means we get an even more robust train service. But Madam Speaker, let me just be clear. Consultations are an exercise in gathering thoughts from stakeholders. They're only the beginning, not the end of the process. SWR and Network Rail will continue to work with stakeholders to make sure that their passenger offer is fit for purpose. And if not, I'll ask them to adjust it. Yes.
Point about being flexible to demand. Will the Minister commit to publishing passenger figures as the new timetable is implemented so that SWR...
Yeah, I think that's a very sensible idea. It's not something we do regularly, so I shall try and endeavour to make sure that we publish as quickly as possible passenger figures so people can see the demand as it hopefully increases massively and therefore can bring back these services. So I will ensure that the SWR and Network Rail continue to work with customers, communities and stakeholders, and where the business case stacks up and the need for additional capacity is there, I'll also ensure that these arguments not only are carefully assessed, but the railway is flexible and responds to demand.
Thank you. The question is that this House do now adjourn. As Mayor's that opinion, say aye. Ayes have it. The ayes have it. Order. Order.